This podcast is available thanks to the Access Internet Radio Project, funded by New Zealand On Air. Nice one.
Welcome to Earthwise, environment news and interviews on Plains FM 96.9. We'd like to thank PADET, the Peace and Disarmament Education Trust, for their support.
Good evening, I'm Martin Griffiths. Welcome to our first new interview of 2014. By the way, 2014 has been designated by the United Nations the year of solidarity with the Palestinian people. For us now, this evening's guest is Andrew Hickman of Down to Earth, Indonesia. We interviewed Andrew nearly 2 years ago when we concentrated mostly on the operations of the giant copper and gold mine, Freeport McMoRan, in West Papua. We discussed the environmental, social and cultural costs to the indigenous West Papuans of the operations of the world's largest gold and copper mine.
But this evening, we will be focusing again on resource extractions in West Papua, this time by oil and gas multinationals. Now, if you look at a map of the New Guinea island, you'll see that it's divided by an invisible straight north-south line between the independent country of Papua New Guinea and the province of Indonesia, which the Indonesians sometimes call Irian Jaya, don't they? And we prefer to call it West Papua. The Freeport McMoRan mine is in the highlands, but the area we'll be looking at is much further to the west. In the northwest part of West Papua is sometimes described as the Bird's Head Peninsula because of its unusual shape, and it's divided by a long bay called Bintuni Bay. So it's good to have an atlas handy. Welcome to Earthwise, Andrew Hickman of Down to Earth, Indonesia.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Well, Andrew, could you please tell us about the NGO, this is Down to Earth, that you're involved with in Indonesia?
Thank you again for having me. As you might remember, we were founded about 30 years ago, 20 to 30 years ago. We came out of two larger or other NGOs, one Survival International that you might have heard of, and another called TAPOL, which was a small NGO founded to look at the issue of political prisoners during the regime of Suharto in Indonesia. But we're focused exclusively on Indonesia, and the aim of Down to Earth is to look at the issue of ecological justice and related issues in Indonesia and how they are affected by and affect the rest of the world.
That's interesting that you mentioned Survival International. I could see similarities. And we had an interview with someone just towards the end of last year talking particularly about the tribal peoples of Brazil, the indigenous people of Brazil, and again the issue of expanding corporations and economic growth at the cost of local communities. Yeah. So that's very interesting.
I think the issue of indigenous peoples and the knowledge that indigenous peoples have is something that the rest of the world is waking up to. And as you can tell, I'm not from New Zealand myself, but it's clear to me that issue is very relevant here in Indonesia with the origins of New Zealand as a country itself being an indigenous origin.
How did you get involved with Down to Earth? A great name, by the way.
I used to work for a larger NGO, Amnesty International. Worked for them for many years.
Is that in England, in London?
I was based in London, yes. But I was looking at Latin America and the Caribbean. But I reached a point where I wanted to expand my repertoire, if you like, and move to a different region. And I left Amnesty and went to do a peace project in Indonesia with an organization called Peace Brigades International, which accompanies human rights and civil society activists who are under threat in conflict zones.
So that would include West Papua, I suppose.
I spent 8 months in West Papua, in Jayapura, accompanying, we were actually setting up the project then, accompanying activists and civil society leaders whose political activities and whose non-political activities were under threat from the situation, the conflict situation that exists there.
Now, I'm glad you used the phrase ecological justice. I think it's more and more important for people who consider themselves peace activists and human rights activists and people who consider themselves environmentalists to see that they need to unite for a common cause, don't they?
Absolutely. I think one of the problems with the way that we look at the world is that we compartmentalize issues. And for many years, the civil and political rights that people talked about were separated off from the issue of economic, social, and cultural rights. And I think it's very important for us to have a holistic view of the world that we live in, and that is especially important now, the issue of environmental and ecological issues.
Also the power of multinationals, isn't it? Now, we said we would concentrate on oil and gas multinationals. In fact, we're looking at BP, aren't we, which is one of the big ones, one of the really big oil and gas corporations in the world.
Absolutely.
It's one of the biggest in the world, isn't it, by capital and by activities around the world?
Well. Yes, absolutely. And you'll know from the Deepwater Horizon incident in the Gulf of Mexico that BP operates throughout the world, is one of the big players in the oil and gas industry. It's interesting, earlier on you mentioned Freeport McMoRan. It's actually the Grasberg mine in central highlands of West Papua, is also jointly owned by Rio Tinto. So there are very big corporations operating throughout West Papua, throughout Indonesia. And the issue of how those multinationals operate, how they're funded, who invests in them, is very key. And that's why it's very important for the public to know about these issues and to raise their voices on these issues.
And the issue of what effect they have on the local communities.
And that's the most important issue,
it's a bit
to gain an understanding of that.
I find it ironical that here we are talking about BP, and a big issue now in New Zealand is to do with Anadarko, the oil drilling corporation. Between BP and Anadarko are the two main culprits for the Deepwater Horizon disaster. So we're talking about people that are getting into quite dangerous, what the Greenpeace calls extreme oil.
Yes, absolutely.
Extreme oil is an excellent word to describe what we're doing. It's not peak oil, because there's plenty there, but it's very hard to get at. So yes. Extreme oil is a good word to describe it.
I think there are so many vested interests in the, if you like, the carbon economy that
yes.
we all live in and use. But because of those interests, it's very difficult for the system to change.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think New Zealand could have quite a role to play here in BP, because one of our biggest superfund investments, which we all sort of, as taxpayers, automatically invest in, is in BP. But there's a whole long list of billions of dollars of multinational corporations, and BP is one of them.
Mm. Well, I understand that the superfund recently, the New Zealand superfund recently divested from Freeport McMoRan.
Yes.
I know that under
pressure, I think it did do that, which is good.
Yes. And the Swedish have just done it, just a couple of months ago.
There are increasingly people are divesting from fossil fuels. Recently, a church investment body in the States and also throughout the world, the Quakers, decided to divest from any coal power company. So it's increasingly important issue about where these companies get their money from.
Now let's get back to West Papua and the bay that I mentioned, the Bituna Bay. There's already quite a lot of extraction going on, isn't there?
Well, I would say that BP is the, if you like, the spearhead as somebody described it, an Indonesian colleague described it as the kind of Trojan horse of the extractive industry, the oil and gas extractive industry in West Papua. Because BP is so powerful, they have the facilities and the money, if you like, to build the infrastructure to extract this oil and gas. So I would say currently BP is probably the biggest single player in the oil and gas industry in West Papua. There are some other companies that drill for oil and gas off the coast of Sorong, which is further west.
But they want to expand even further, don't they?
They do. BP, the Indonesian president, was feted recently in London by a state visit. And during that state visit, the Indonesian government signed something like a $12.1 billion deal to expand the Tangguh project in Bintuni Bay.
It's just big money, isn't it? It's huge.
It's almost unfathomable. Yes. the amounts of money involved here.
And involving power and money, I gather the president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Yudhoyono, SBY, was given an honorary knighthood by the Queen.
He was. Unfortunately, the way these things seem to work is that you know, it's a sort of you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and there is a suspicion that part of the reason for doing that is more based on self-interest by countries rather than any real merit, if you like. I'm not particularly wanting to comment on SBY's record himself, but the two things just happen to be next door to each other.
Now, the local people of that area, how do they feel? Do they have any say in what's happening?
Well, we recently conducted a workshop with the local communities precisely to try to find out from them and to hopefully help them to discuss the issue as to how to respond to this new and growing issue that's impacting their lives. When we first arrived to do the workshop, this was in November of 2012, so it was
they're
just
quite recent, yeah.
Very recently, just over a year ago. We were treated with really quite a lot of suspicion, even though we were doing the workshop with local community activists and organizations. They have, if you like, received so much so many promises from, in particular, the company itself, from BP, as to what is going to happen. And the communities are fed up of hearing these promises and actually their lives not changing. And all they see is bigger and bigger oil tankers coming into their bay, shipping what they see as their natural wealth, justifiably, shipping it out. And their own lives not changing for the better, and if anything, changing for the worse, because the arrival of these big corporations creates conflict. It actually adds to the levels of conflict, in that one community is favoured over another, and jealousies are generated.
So, imported workers, presumably with families or with
absolutely
Western lifestyles implanted in the middle of a different culture like that?
Absolutely. And that's one of the issues that happens to a lot of these big projects. To be fair to BP, they have tried to mitigate that. But what we have been saying to BP and others for many years now is that this type of large-scale, top-down operation is inappropriate for the region that it's in, and that however hard a company might try, the net effect is a negative one. And the one thing that I would add, as well as the issue of immigrant workers coming into lands that are already populated and being, if you like, worked by the indigenous people, is that also there is a militarization of the area, mm-hmm. which in the context of West Papua is disastrous.
It's the Indonesian military, of course.
It is the Indonesian military, and therein are a whole lot of political issues which you will know about, and certainly there are many in New Zealand who are working on that issue.
You're listening to Earthwise on Plains FM 96.9. This evening's guest is Andrew Hickman of Down to Earth Indonesia. Yourself at such a remote area, have you been there?
To Bintuni Bay?
Yes.
We organized, or maybe I didn't mention, we organized a workshop.
We meaning Down to Earth.
Down to Earth, together with our local partners. So we have two local partners in Manokwari, which is the provincial capital, and a local partner in Bintuni Bay itself. And we organised a workshop with communities affected by BP Tangguh, the project there, in November of 2012. So it was just over a year ago.
And you yourself went?
I did. Yes, we were organising it. We based the workshop around a document that we produced, which was intended to inform local communities and Papuans of the promises that BP had made. So despite the fact that BP has been there and has been working in the community for a while, the communities are still very unclear as to exactly what they have been promised by the company and what kind of standards that they're being asked and what kind of standards BP have said that they would meet by being there. So the aim of our document was to try to inform the community, and we've done different activities to try and, if you like, give that information to communities. And one of the things that I'm hoping to do in the coming year is to publish a comic of this information, so that, if you like, to get this information to communities in all sorts of different ways. But this workshop was built around that document. But essentially, it was about communities getting together amongst themselves and talking and working out how they want to respond to this new reality in their lives.
How did you even get to Bintuni Bay? I mean, it must be a terribly isolated place.
It is a very isolated place. We actually went overland from Manokwari, which is the regional capital. We had to go in two jeeps, which there is a road some of the way, but not part of the way is more of a mud track. And it was about a day's journey and a night's journey. And it is indeed very remote. And the more remote that you go in West Papua, if you like, it is a more it's a jungle in many senses of the word. It's quite exposed to not only the geographical and dangers that are there, but it's a jungle politically as well, and that was one of the big problems of working in Papua. Is that there's a lot of suspicion, and the authorities that are there are very wary of any outsiders coming in. Sometimes with good reason. So it's not understandable that outsiders sometimes can cause more problems than they solve. So you do need to tread very carefully.
So you organized a conference and West Papuans took part. Did they feel free, able to speak freely, do you think?
Well, that was the issue, is that the first, it was about, we the workshop was about a four-day workshop. It was in Indonesian, which is the language, if you like, that most people speak, although they've all got their local languages. And The workshop was exclusively for communities, so we invited about 40 village representatives from affected by around the project, and the author we there was no one there on the first 3 days from any of the authorities or from the company. So the first day, if you like, was the communities were very suspicious, even though they knew a lot of the people who were organising the event with us, just because they've heard it all before, if you like, and they've heard so many people tell them good things. But by the end of the third day, the atmosphere was very positive and very constructive. And if anything, I would say that the communities did feel able to express themselves within that room. And we actually, they asked for the company and for a local government representative to come along on the fourth day. And that actually became quite a heated event, whereby the communities themselves expressed very strongly their dissatisfaction with what is happening in their community.
Do they understand how much profit BP makes? Do the profits trickle down at all?
Well, I think that was one of the, you know, that's one of the contentious issues. I mean, yes, we did various presentations during the course of the workshop, and one included looking at the issue of revenue and how that revenue is shared. And I think the communities were really quite shocked when they could see their project in the context, in the overall context of what BP does and the amounts of money involved. And it's not always very helpful to talk about money because, you know, everyone's realities are different. But in the context of what you're asking, do the resources and the riches that BP and in governments, whether it be the government in Jakarta or international governments, are getting from this project, the communities are saying quite clearly that their lives are not being materially improved to the extent that they would like them to be improved, and it is not the difficulty here is also about livelihoods and what is development. So how can communities develop in a way that they themselves want to develop and they feel empowered and in a position of control over how their lives are being run.
I mean, talking about revenue, I mean, are schools being built and hospitals for the people? Or are they getting any input into that sort of thing?
Well, one of the issues in Bintuni is that for many years, BP have promised electricity for Bintuni, which is the main town on the north shore of the bay. That electricity is very, very intermittent and does not cover the communities so far. So this promise that BP have made and made many years ago has yet to be realised.
What about the idea of culture shock? It must feel like the traditional way of life is just not acceptable anymore or possible anymore.
Well, I think that's the balance and that is difficult to strike is how much do communities keep hold of their traditions and how much do they accept that change is going to happen. But I think the key point here is that communities should be allowed to decide for themselves. And what is happening in Papua, in West Papua, and also in Bintuni Bay, is that local communities are not in control of what's happening to their own future. And that is, it is in many ways a disgrace.
There must be threats of pollution as well.
There are threats of pollution, as you will know from the history of oil and gas exploration, which is littered with disasters such as the Deepwater Horizon disaster. It is a permanent threat, and not only will pollution happen. I mean, one of the other issues that I have been working on is the issue of coal mining in Indonesia, which is, as we were talking about earlier, before the program, Indonesia is the is the biggest exporter of thermal coal in the world.
Really? So I didn't know that. Mm.
So these big projects do pollute, and there is no escaping that.
Of course, as far as climate change, yes. I suppose it's even discussed in Indonesia, is it?
It is discussed amongst the educated and if you like the elite, but one of the issues is that the big companies and governments are continuing to mine fossil fuels and to dig up oil and gas in a way that is completely unsustainable.
So really, the whole world is being threatened.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So yours is the local picture of the local of the whole world scene, isn't it?
A little bit, yes. Yes.
Well, thank you for coming to talk to us, Andrew. I admire people who are concerned about what's happening in various parts of the world. Right. I'd like us to think of us as a one human body, really.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
yes.
Andrew.
Thanks for coming all this way.
Thank you for having us. And hopefully the issue of West Papua will remain in people's minds and hearts.
There's a lot of interest in West Papua and Papua New Guinea, and I hope the people in West Papua, I know we're running out of time, hope they're learning English as well as Indonesian, are they? Do they learn English in schools as well as Indonesian?
As the English is a common language throughout the world, but education in West Papua is very limited. The development indexes in West Papua are very, very low.
Is there a common pidgin language?
Well, if you like, Indonesian language, Bahasa Indonesia, is the unifying language throughout Indonesia.
I'm afraid our time is up now, so thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
So from us at Earthwise,
good night.
Good night.